Thank you. Mr. Speaker, Mr. President, Madam Chief Justice, Lieutenant Governor, members of the General Assembly, my fellow Hoosiers, it is indeed an honor to stand before you for the third time to discuss the state of our state and the work we'll do together to make life better for all Hoosiers. I can tell you this much, it doesn't get old. For I know just how fortunate we are to occupy our respective offices, and to therefore have the opportunity and duty to make a positive impact on the people's lives and the state we all love. That's why I'm pleased to report that thanks to the energy and the hard work of Hoosiers from Angola to New Harmony, from Henryville to Hammond, Indiana is on a roll and the state of our state is strong. And there are more Hoosiers working today than at any other time in our state's history. Our labor participation rate remains higher than the national average, while our unemployment rate is lower than any state we touch. We've tripled our foreign direct investment in our state just over the last 3 years. And we've broken records 2 years running now for new job commitments coming our way. Statewide, tourism is up, wages are up, in-migration is up, home sales are hot, building permits have surged, and our tech ecosystem is growing. Now, as important as these facts are now, we're planting seeds to ensure that Indiana's harvest will be bountiful for years to come. This two-part mission, making the lives better for Hoosiers today while building for the future, has been and will remain my administration's focus. My aim, to coin a phrase, is to take Indiana to the next level. This isn't just a billboard or a bumper sticker to me. It's an action-oriented aspiration that Indiana can be one of the leading states in the whole country by any measure. To achieve it, we must bring the same strength and vitality to our quality of life that we have to our economy. So tonight, I'll dig a little deeper into what I mean by the next level and what it'll take for us to get there. Because when I think back to those not so many years ago, when our ship of state was taking on water fast, when our economy was weak and narrowly focused, when we had no reserves and we were outspending revenue year after year after year, we were dead in the water. But thanks to you and some of our predecessors, we turned Indiana 180 degrees and we set sail on a course to sustainable growth, fiscal strength, and a more efficient government. Thanks to this continuity, Indiana has been transformed from having one of the worst financial conditions of any state to now being one of the best. Now, I chose to focus on cultivating a strong and diverse economy as the first pillar of my ongoing agenda because the first step to the next level must be a vibrant, growing economy. If our private sector isn't doing well, then surely our public sector will be the first to be strained. That's why we can't slow down or stop now. Global connectivity, robotics, artificial intelligence, big data, machine learning, and nonstop technological advances are permanent features of the future of work, workers, and the workplace. And that offers an exciting way forward to those who embrace change as an ally, not as an adversary. We simply can't just maintain our current course. Instead, we must throttle up. Just like 2 years ago, we burst off the starting line, and we kept the pedal to the metal ever since. We've operated within honestly balanced budgets, protected our AAA credit rating, and set aside nearly $2 billion in our state savings account. We've been ranked best in the Midwest, a top five state in the nation for doing business, and number one for small business. But to stay ahead of our competition and to keep breaking those jobs records, we must keep sharpening our economic development tools to give us the flexibility to attract more capital investment and attract more people to locate here. So yes, I will once again pursue exempting military pensions from our state income taxes so we can attract and retain talented, patriotic veterans who we know are some of the most experienced, focused, and loyal workers anywhere. And speaking of veterans, we're fortunate to have a few heroes with us this evening. In April, the Navy christened the fourth USS Indianapolis. The second ship, as you'll recall, of that name was lost at sea in 1945. The new vessel will be used for mine clearing and anti-surface warfare. That ship will join the new USS Indiana, the most modern, sophisticated, fast-attack Virginia-class submarine in the world, longer than a football field, capable of doing 25 knots when submerged. For those of you Googling that right now, that's 28.77 miles per hour, pretty fast for a football field-long boat underwater. You'll be especially pleased to know that the sailors on board the USS Indiana are officially called Hoosiers. Ladies and gentlemen, please help me recognize two great Americans, Commander Colin Kane of the Indianapolis and Commander David Grogan of the Indiana. Sirs, we salute you both and your crews. We are justifiably proud of our Hoosier connections to those who defend our nation. Let their service inspire us to reach for that next level when it comes to our quality of life, education, and workforce pursuits. Because just as with economic gains, we will not reach our destination in these other critical areas without changing some of our past ways. But when we set sail on that right course to steer by, we will make progress here as well every day. And that's precisely the role and the goal of my other four pillars that I introduced to you all 2 years ago. For example, we're making real progress building and rebuilding our infrastructure, something that's essential for us to remain the undisputed crossroads of America. We're accelerating regional road projects like completing I-69 3 years ahead of schedule. We're pursuing transformational rail projects up in Northwest Indiana, a fourth water port in Southeast Indiana, Representative Fry. And we're working to make Indianapolis the Midwest destination for nonstop international flights. But we're more than just about ports and planes and trains and automobiles. The internet is just as essential to our prosperity today as highways were a century ago. And we have far too many Hoosiers without access to affordable high-speed broadband. When I was visiting one of our towns, someone said to me, "Eric, if you come by our Starbucks between 7 and 9 p.m. at night, you'll see parents with their kids doing their homework because they can't get Wi-Fi at home." Another Hoosier told me kids in my town go to McDonald's to go online. Nothing against large coffees and Big Macs. I'm a big fan of both. But all students should be able to do their homework at home. So we're making the largest single investment in our state's history in broadband now, this year, so we can get those folks out of the internet darkness they find themselves in. And to help more people enjoy the diverse outdoor beauty that our state offers, we're also making the single largest investment in our state history to expand our hiking and biking and riding trails. Because we all know today, many times people choose where to live before they choose where to work. And these amenities matter. And to that point, reaching the next level requires us to strengthen our state's human infrastructure. Last year, I said that developing a 21st century workforce is the defining issue of the decade. Nothing has changed my opinion or my focus on building a Hoosier workforce that can outcompete anyone, anywhere, any day. Our efforts and investments are designed to meet the goal of ensuring 60% of Hoosier adults have a high-value credential beyond high school. To do that, we must get our kids to start thinking about their career paths earlier in their lives. So we will introduce every student to career and apprenticeship options in Indiana's key opportunity industries. We'll support students who seek a four-year degree and those who don't, so that everyone has a pathway to a fulfilling career. Earlier this year, I met a trailblazer who is doing just that, Mary Robertson, the superintendent of Perry Central Community School. Perry Central is a small school down south, all grades K through 12 under one roof, nestled in the middle of the Hoosier National Forest. Through partnerships with local manufacturers like Jasper Engines and Wopaka Foundry, they've created a business on the school grounds. Students get hands-on experience in advanced manufacturing, product research and development, and also learn soft skills like a good, strong work ethic. The kids learn and earn money. Their parents are delighted. And Jasper Engines in Wopaka help students further their education and, oh, by the way, train potential employees. When we talked, Mary insisted our kids can be just as successful as anybody, and she's proving it. Thank you, Superintendent Robertson. A strong economy depends on a world-class workforce, and that workforce depends on a great education. And a great education depends on great teachers. I'll bet everyone here had a teacher who had a profound impact on your life. I've had several, and I've come to appreciate and respect them more and more each day. And one way to attract and retain more of those teachers is to make teacher pay more competitive. In my budget proposal last week, I requested K through 12 education funding increases of 2% for the next 2 years. That's a 4% increase and equates to $432 million more than today. But we can and we must do more. We're in a financial position to use surplus dollars to pay off a pension liability that local schools currently pay. Just like paying off your mortgage frees up money in your personal budget, this state investment will save all local schools $140 million over the biennium, with continued savings thereafter. These two proposals would result in $572 million new dollars K through 12 to schools over the biennium. I believe local school districts should allocate 100% of the $140 million to increasing teacher paychecks. That's what we'll be doing to make an immediate impact. And over the long term, I'm creating the next level teacher pay commission, chaired by Hoosier businessman and community leader Michael L. Smith, to identify resources that can be made available to make sure our teacher compensation is competitive with neighboring Midwestern states, ready to act on by the 2021 legislative session. Once again, Indiana will show the way. We solve challenging issues together. Along with improving K through 12 education, we must also skill up and reskill our adult population. The good news is we're making encouraging progress. From 2016 to 2017, Indiana's post-high school credential attainment rate grew at nearly double the national growth average, and even faster among Hoosiers between 25 and 44 years old. And the number of Hoosiers with a STEM-related bachelor's degree also grew at a healthy 8%. But we can and must do more here too, which is exactly where our Next Level Jobs program comes in. In 2018, nearly 9,000 Hoosiers enrolled in workforce-ready eligible certificate programs, 9,000. And another 17,000 who previously started college came back to finish their post-secondary educations. That's why we'll expand our Workforce Ready grant to continue our push to get more adults to complete degrees and certificates in high-demand industries. And that's why we'll double the funding for the Employer Training Grant, which provides financial support to Indiana companies to hire and train and retrain Hoosier adults to fill our job openings. Last October, we announced that the Markle Foundation, along with Microsoft, made Indiana only the second state in the country to land its Skillful program, which helps connect Hoosiers to fulfilling careers. They said they chose Indiana because we're doing, not talking. Given the urgency around strengthening our workforce, we can't look past or overlook anyone, especially those who want to earn a second chance. In 2018, we began enrolling Department of Correction offenders in programs to train them for high-wage, high-demand jobs, everything from welding to computer coding. I said last year we'd graduate 1,000 by 2020, and we're already there, a year ahead of schedule. We became the first state outside of California to introduce a new program called The Last Mile into our prisons. Its founders, Chris Redlitz and Beverly Parenti, are here with us tonight. In less than a year, we have already started programs in two of our facilities. And Google.org recently announced it would invest $2 million into this proven program that has a 0% recidivism rate. And thanks to Steve and Kathy Simon, we'll soon be announcing further expansion. Chris and Beverly, Steve and Kathy, thank you for believing in Indiana. also attended the first graduation of a different workforce program, this one down at the Madison Correctional Facility. The graduation speaker was a young woman named Brittany, who had been in prison for 5 years. While there, she got training in welding and manufacturing, got the skills she needed, and she got a job. That's enabled her to move into her own home, and she's now helping her seventh grade nephew and her mom. And 1 year into her new career, she's earned a promotion. If I had to guess, it'll be the first of many. The best thing that Brittany told us, she said, "I get to wake up every day not looking at bars, but looking at family." Brittany is paying it both forward and back a generation. Brittany, will you please stand up so we can stand up for you? I'll tell you another group I'm not giving up on. In fact, we'll continue to put our full force behind attacking the drug epidemic throughout our entire state, because ladies and gentlemen, we're making progress here too. Our new 211 open beds program has made more than 4,000 referrals for treatment services and support groups, connecting people quicker than ever, which can mean, as you know, the difference between life and death. The number of opioid prescriptions is down. Communities are forming their own systems of care, and we are getting drug data faster and more accurately than ever before. But better data means we have more information about the extent of the issue, and it shows we still have a long way to go. To get there, this year, we'll improve access to quality treatment, expand recovery housing, and provide better services for pregnant women who are substance dependent. We will keep working 24/7, 365 to get more of our Hoosier neighbors on the road to their recovery. And we'll continue to be transparent and accountable on pressing issues like child welfare, infant mortality, and student safety. Last spring, I convened a group to examine school safety, and the resulting report led to some recommendations that will enhance mental health services in our schools, provide more funding for safety equipment, and require active shooter training and threat assessments in our schools, because that's the world we live in now. We are putting all of our efforts into implementing this entire plan. But I have heard from Hoosiers who say we need to do more, and I agree. Several pieces of legislation related to school safety have been introduced, and I look forward to working with you all, with moms and dads and schools, as the coming days ahead unfold. Ladies and gentlemen, I also stand before you tonight proud of the progress we're making at our Department of Child Services. A year ago, we had just started a top-to-bottom review for DCS. Now we are moving full speed ahead on addressing all those 20 recommendations that not only protect children, but recognize the difficult work of those who protect them. It's still early, but the investments we've made to increase caseworker salaries and improve the workforce culture is making a difference. The ratio of supervisors to case managers has improved, so there is more time for supportive supervision and coaching. Turnover among frontline staff is down and retention is up, which means more stability between caseworkers and the families they work with. and fewer children are re-entering the DCS system after their cases are closed. Now is not the time to pull back resources, right when we're starting to see such progress. I also challenged our social service agencies to become the best state in the Midwest for infant mortality by 2024. A tall order considering where we started. You all approved our Levels of Care program to assure that high-risk babies are delivered at the hospitals with the right facilities to meet the needs of moms and infants. Now we're seeking to implement two more programs that aim directly at reducing infant mortality. A navigator program to help guide high-risk pregnant women, and a program to verbally screen all expecting mothers for substance use disorder so that those who need it will be connected to treatment. These are the kind of efforts it will take to get more babies to celebrate their first birthdays, regardless of their zip codes. Finally, we will not slow our efforts to modernize state government to better serve our citizens and businesses alike. But truly serving all our citizens requires more than just increasing our efficiency. Indiana is one of five states that does not yet have a bias crimes law. It's time for us to move off that list. I look forward to working with the General Assembly to achieve this goal so our state law reflects what's already my administration's employment policy. Businesses interested in Indiana care a lot about this issue, but it's not just about business. At heart, this has to do with people's dignity and how we treat one another. Standing strong against targeted violence motivated to instill fear against an entire group is the right thing to do. So let's strengthen our state laws by ensuring judges can sentence more severely when a group is targeted, even though there may only be one actual victim. With your help, and only with your help, we can do this. Now, I said earlier that a strong economy is essential to determining our desired destiny. And to truly reach the next level, our quality of life must be equally strong. You can see a good example of that up on 65 in Northwest Indiana at Fair Oaks Farms. Over the past 50 years, Mike and Sue McCloskey went from running small dairies in California to bigger dairies in New Mexico. When they wanted to expand their business, they chose Indiana because of our prime location. It enabled them to reach the most customers. Today, Fair Oaks has 30,000 cows and is recognized as the sustainability leader in the U.S. dairy industry. They also transform their cow manure into power for their farms and trucks and have started building affordable housing for their growing workforce. Mike says this success couldn't have happened anywhere else. He said, "I got to tell you, there's no better state to work in than Indiana. Mike and Sue, thank you for planting a field of dreams in Indiana." So we have business innovators who could have gone anywhere, but they chose Indiana as their launch pad because we occupy the best location in the nation, core to shore. They stayed in Indiana because we don't hold them back with high taxes and regulations. We cheer on their success. They're turning a profit, contributing to their community, and they never stop thinking about ways of converting have-nots into haves. Whether it's businesses like Fair Oaks Farms or Forest River, Genesis or Emphasis, Lily or Indiana Limestone, whether it's people like Mike and Sue, Chris and Beverly, Steve and Kathy, Mary or Brittany, or whether it's commanders and sailors in places we'll never know. Hoosiers across Indiana and beyond are leading our state into the future, the Indiana way, growing locally and finding creative ways to make lives better, and in the process, taking Indiana to the next level. I'm going to focus every day on supporting them and steering our state onward and upward. May God continue to bless you and our great state. Thank you.